You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
All right, good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Monday, July 7th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome back from our week-long vacation for the 4th of July weekend. I hope you've gotten to celebrate America's Independence Day if you're here in the States, or just a lovely July weekend if you're in another country. We're glad to have you back. We're also glad to have our own Priscilla Seibin back from our Colorado office. How you doing, Priscilla?
I'm good, thanks. How are you? Can you hear me all right?
We hear you great. Everything we did over the weekend and over the week to try to get you sounding closer to us sounds like it's working just fine. What happened for your week? Did you have some fun?
Yeah, I did. I had some family visit from out of town, and so we did some mountain adventures and had a nice, relaxing 4th of July holiday, so it was good.
All right. Well, we're looking forward to hearing the 420 radio news from you coming up right after this first break and in the headlines today. Of course, Washington State tomorrow is going to be opening its first licensed retail recreational pot shops. I am actually getting on a train after the show and heading straight to Seattle, Washington, where tomorrow I'll be coming to you live from Seattle's only legal pot store. It's the weirdest thing. They got like three licenses in Spokane, two in Vancouver, two in Tacoma, only one in Seattle. Now, that's just the first few licenses. There's another 314 or so, 310 of them that need to be finished up. But for now, two dozen licensed pot outlets in the state of Washington will be live from one of them tomorrow. So check us out on 420 Radio. Also in the headlines today, New York officially became the 23rd medical marijuana state. Sort of. We've got Washington, D.C. following our lead on marijuana legalization. We've got Berkeley, California passing a measure to help poor patients, a marijuana farmers market in Los Angeles, and new poll information from the state of Pennsylvania. So stay tuned after this first break for Priscilla Seibin and our 420 radio news. Now, also on the show today, we're going to go behind the headlines. You know how we've been so excited about the first FDA-approved medical marijuana study for post-traumatic stress disorder? Well, guess what, folks? It's not going to happen. Yeah, and the reason behind it is pretty shocking. So stay tuned after the news for Behind the Headlines. We'll tell you why the University of Arizona is screwing our nation's veterans. Also on the show today at half past, it's Monday, so it's time to take your medicine. A little dose of cannabis science with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Live Q&A with the doctor. He'll be taking your questions at 971-533-7111 or through our chat room if you want to get involved in our chat line. Just type help and one of our moderators will help you get all involved in the chat. Also on today's show, in looking forward to that Washington State pot legalization, we're going to have call-in guests from Washington State, experts in the Washington State legalization movement up there, and some business experts as well. Well, we'll talk to all of them in a big conference call coming up at 45 past the hour that will probably last all the way through our Hour 2 Toker Talk Radio. Hope you enjoyed our replays last week. If you didn't tune in last week because we weren't live, you can check out all 11 hours of our video footage that we've got up at our YouTube page. Just look for Radical Russ on YouTube and you'll find the set list for all the videos from the Cannabis Cup in Northern California a couple weekends ago, including Coral Reefer, Subcool, Ms. Jill, Valerie Corral, John Getman, the Dab panel, the Grow panel, so much information. You get it for free thanks to the VIP supporters of 420 Radio. We're back with the news right after this.
Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station. The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, treat law enforcement with respect and stand up for your rights by repeating, "I respectfully invoke all of my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak with my attorney." Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at omarfigueroa.com. Drug Truth Network Cultural Baggage with Dean Becker from Houston, Texas, replaying Wednesdays at 11 Pacific on 420radio.org. The Marijuana Business Association, or MJBA, are proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show. It is the mission of the MJBA to establish integrity and legitimacy, create common market standards, provide market intelligence, and develop best ethical business practices for participants in the emerging legal marijuana industry, including commercial hemp, medical marijuana, and recreational marijuana for adults. Learn more about the Marijuana Business Association and visit MJBA.net to join today. That's MJBA.net. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Priscilla Simon.
Hi, this is your 420 Radio News for Monday, July 7th, 2014. Washington State is set to open 24 recreational marijuana stores tomorrow morning. Today, the Washington State Liquor Control Board issued 24 licenses, including 3 in Spokane, 2 each in Vancouver and Tacoma, and, oddly enough, just 1 license in all of Seattle. However, a limited set of licensed growers means the shops may put limits on purchase amounts for fear of running out of product on day one. One retailer in Vancouver estimates that cannabis buds will sell for $12 to $15 per gram. There will be no cannabis-infused edibles or liquids to purchase yet, as no licensed kitchen has yet to go online. We will have expert guests joining us from Washington in our final show segment today to explain, and our host, Radical Russ, will be joining us live from Seattle tomorrow from the city's first legal pot shop.
Yeah, and quick note on that, my apologies on the accuracy there. They issued 24 licenses. There's a 24-hour waiting period before they can open, but not all 24 of them are going to open tomorrow morning. I just found this out before we went on the air, too. There's 2 shops opening in Vancouver, Washington, which is just across the river from here in Portland. One of them's going to open on Mill Plain Road on Wednesday, and another one's going to open on Friday. So they could have opened Tuesday, but they still have more, you know, details to work out, whatever it might be. And I was actually quoted on a story that appeared in our Portland newspaper here, the Oregonian, when they were asking about, you know, how is Oregon reacting? How is Portland reacting to Washington State's legal pot shops? And my quote was along the lines of, you're not going to see anybody from Portland beating a path to Vancouver to get $12 to $15 grams of weed, because that's what the current estimates are, $12 to $15 a gram, maybe even as high as $25 a gram. And most of that, Allison Holcomb tells me, the architect of I-502, she says that's a function of the limited supply. There's just not enough supply. And as more growers get online and get processed and start flooding the market, there might be a reduction in that price. I don't know. I think the price is also born somewhat of the 3 levels of 25% taxation plus state sales tax. We will find out, especially after Oregon passes legalization that has marijuana taxes capped at $1.25 a gram.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo on Saturday signed the law making New York the 23rd state to recognize medical use of cannabis. New York's is the second law after Minnesota to ban the smoking of medical marijuana, instead only allowing non-smoked edible, liquid, and vaporized forms of cannabis. 5 commercial entities will be licensed statewide, and each may open 4 retail outlets for a total of 20 possible dispensaries for a state of 20 million people. New York's program has a 7-year sunset clause, meaning the law will expire if not renewed by by politicians in Albany, but the governor, the state health department, and the state police superintendent can shut the program down sooner if they feel it is being abused. Patients will not be able to qualify for medical marijuana in New York with chronic pain or nausea. No patients will receive any medicine for the next 18 months while the state works out the regulations.
So like I said, kind of, sort of medical marijuana. And I'd been curious about this because Minnesota, as it passed its law to become the 22nd state, specifically made it no flower, right? They didn't want you to be able to smoke anything, so you couldn't get flower. You could only get tinctures, oils, salves, edibles, and so on. New York's was kind of sketchy. I couldn't tell from most of the stories written about it if it was no smoking, but you could still go buy flower and take the flower home and then no, just don't smoke it, right? Which, like, how would they police that? That would be impossible. I found an earlier reference when the state Senate passed the bill. This was, I think, in one of the New York, maybe New York Daily News or one of the other outlets there, that it expressed that it would only be sold in non-smokable forms. So that, to me, would suggest that no flower, right? Because flower is, you know, a smokable form of cannabis. It sounds to me like New York's going to be just oils and tinctures and salves, just like Minnesota, a no plant medical marijuana state, which again, you know, begs the question, is that truly a medical marijuana state? I have this map that I've released, and if you follow my Twitter account, you can find it, the marijuana map of the United States. And I've actually come up with a different shading for Minnesota and New York, and I'm calling them medical THC CBD states. Right? They're states where you can get the cannabinoids, you can get the THC, you can get the CBD, but you can't get the marijuana itself. We cannot call it a medical marijuana state if you can't have marijuana. If all they're allowing is oils that have THC and CBD in them, that's a medical THC CBD state. And then, of course, there's also a shade for all those southern states that have gone medical CBD only.
Activists in the nation's capital have submitted over 58,000 signatures to put marijuana legalization on the city's November ballot. Washington, D.C. organizers, called the D.C. Cannabis Campaign, hope their Initiative 71 will succeed in the district where over 60% of residents support the idea. The initiative would legalize possession of 2 ounces of marijuana and cultivation of 6 plants at home. Recently, D.C. City Council has decriminalized marijuana possession, but Representative Andy Harris, a Republican from Maryland, has attached an amendment to an appropriations bill in Congress that would forbid Washington, D.C. from spending any taxpayer dollars on enacting pro-marijuana laws. Paradoxically, Representative Harris's amendment would mean no D.C. cop could write a $25 ticket under marijuana decriminalization, effectively making possession legal anyway. But it would also mean no ballots could be printed or votes counted on legalization in November.
Yeah, this is the same, you know, kind of stall, deny, delay tactic they used with medical marijuana. Washington, D.C. passed medical marijuana in 1998, but then Georgia Representative Bob Barr sponsored an appropriations rider just like this one that said, nope, D.C. can't count or can't spend money on this election, or they can't, no, can't count ballots. That's what it was. You know, they couldn't spend money in the election, so we can't count the votes for medical marijuana. And then finally the courts came along and said, no, if this is a democracy, you can't have an election and then not count the votes. You got to count the votes. So then Barr changed his amendment to say, all right, they can count the votes. And that's when we found out that medical marijuana passed by 69% in Washington, D.C., the biggest support it's gotten anywhere that it's ever passed. Then he made the amendment, okay, well, they passed it, but now you can't spend any money to implement it, right? So you couldn't, you know, have the registration or the forms or the inspections or anything like that, effectively making it so that Washington, D.C. couldn't have medical marijuana. This ran from 1998 to 2010 before the Barack Obama administration and the Congress there finally let that rider lapse and allowed D.C. to start spending money to implement its medical marijuana program, which is still somewhat of a failure of a program to be able to supply medicine to patients or get people enrolled. But at least finally, they were allowed to spend some money to enact the will of their own voters. And curious note, that Representative Bob Barr ended up becoming a paid lobbyist for the Marijuana Policy Project after he left office.
Somebody called Danny Danko. Berkeley, California has approved a first-in-the-nation program of free weed for indigent patients.
Free weed!
Free weed!
Free weed!
The Berkeley City Council last week approved a plan that would not only allow for a fourth dispensary in the city, but also require all city dispensaries to give away 2% of their cannabis inventory to low-income and homeless patients for free. It further mandates that the 2% can't just be swag or trim, but must be the same high-quality flowers it offers for sale. Berkeley patient group's Sean Luce said, quote, "We found out over the years that one of the cruel realities is that when you get sick and you have a serious illness, is that it's often hard to keep a job. It can be hard to keep your income up. So those people really need the help the most," end quote.
Wow, this is an amazing program. Congratulations to the city of Berkeley for, you know, enacting something like this. And especially having the foresight to say, hey, it can't just be the swag. You know, you got off from the same good quality medicine. But it's weird. Berkeley's such a weird place, you know, so progressive and forward thinking on getting medical marijuana to patients for free. But you can't smoke a cigarette in your own backyard. It's the weirdest place. Either, I mean, a tobacco cigarette, you're Satan, but a marijuana cigarette, you're a patient. Berkeley's an interesting place.
And this weekend's marijuana farmers market in Los Angeles attracted a line of patients stretching for blocks and waiting for hours. The California Heritage Market opened up this weekend, and director Paisley Bradbury explained that patients will, quote, be able to get flowers, concentrates, edibles, lotions, and you can get 70% off the prices at a dispensary, end quote. Los Angeles's recently passed Proposition D has shuttered many of the dispensaries in Los Angeles County, forcing patients to scramble to acquire their medicine. Attendance was estimated at over 5,000 patients on Friday and Saturday, despite the sweltering heat and long wait times. One attendee appreciated being able to quiz the growers directly about their product, saying, quote, "Sometimes the shops don't really know," end quote, while a grower explained, quote, "The dispensary is so last decade," end quote.
Yeah, and this farmer's market thing brings to mind the presentation that John Getman did at the Cannabis Cup a couple weekends ago. And check it out. You know, I've got it online at the Radical Rest YouTube page. And he points out that the only way that you can have any sort of government control over a drug is if the government has the means to control the production of it. So certain types of pharmaceutical drugs, they can have a lot of control because you need a factory to make these things, right? And then the government can just say, well, no factory for you. With marijuana, you can grow it in your damn closet. You can grow it in your own backyard. You can grow it anywhere outside of the Arctic Circle and the Antarctic Circle. I mean, it grows everywhere. The government can't have any hopes of trying to control this. And the more they do, it reminds me of that analogy of how to hold a bar of soap, right? If you hold it too loosely, it falls out of your hands. If you grip it too tightly, it spits out of your hands. You got to have just kind of hold it there, right? Same thing with marijuana laws, man. If they put too high a taxes, too much restriction, too many hoops to jump through, then the means of production will meet the consumers, like these farmers markets, like the black market, like these gray market medical marijuana operations. Governments need to understand that the way marijuana will work is best determined by how the people in the marijuana market are going to make it work. Let the laws of supply and demand dictate how this works. The prices of marijuana will drop, the access will grow, and believe it or not, things will turn out better for the prohibitionists too. The things they hate about marijuana, the crime, the degradation, anything else, that goes away too once we take those massive profits out of it.
Support for legalization of recreational marijuana is falling in Pennsylvania, even as support for medical marijuana is rising. The most recent Franklin and Marshall College poll shows support for legalization at just 35%, falling from a sky high of 38% last May. Meanwhile, support for medical marijuana has risen to 84%, up from 82% last May. Strong support for medical marijuana has now reached 59%, up from 55% last May. A medical marijuana bill has been sent to the Pennsylvania State Judiciary Committee.
All right. Support rising in Pennsylvania. Let's see if we can close out the entire Northeast. Get it all medical.
Yeah.
Oh, how long ago did I promise Big Daddy Fink that I would change that bell? I don't know. Since June? We've been busy. I got to get on a train after the show. Priscilla Seibman's got to go to her 420 safety meeting there in Colorado. Thanks for the news. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See ya. Travel safe.
When we come back, we're going to go behind the headlines. We will take a look at how the University of Arizona has screwed over our nation's veterans.
420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
Welcome back, everybody. 22 after the hour. Time for us to go behind the headlines where the University of Arizona screws our veterans on PTSD medical marijuana research. After getting all our hopes up that there would finally be an FDA-approved, U.S. government-supplied, triple-blind clinical research trial on the use of medical marijuana to treat post-traumatic stress diagnosis for our nation's veterans, the University of Arizona has fired the researcher who received the federal permission for the study. Oh, and by the way, before I go on, PTSD to me is post-traumatic stress diagnosis. It's not a disorder. When a soldier goes through combat and suffers the mental and moral injuries of war, the reaction of his brain to that or her brain to that is not a disorder any more than limping is a disorder of breaking your leg. Okay. It's I hate that term disorder because I think it stigmatizes, especially with, you know, how mental health is already stigmatized in this country. So just so you understand, when I say PTSD, I mean diagnosis. All right. It's taken 4 years for this researcher. Her name is Dr. Suzanne Sisley. And pardon me if I've mispronounced that. To receive the government's permission to begin trials on cannabis. Because, as we all know, cannabis is a federally designated Schedule I drug for which there is supposedly no medical benefit, despite the federal government's own patent on it for medical uses, and despite the government's continued supplying of medical marijuana to 4 federal patients, and despite 23 states recognizing its medical usage, including the home state of the University of Arizona. To gain the government's permission to study cannabis, Dr. Sisley first received approval from the FDA in March of 2011. But this March, the Department of Health and Human Services finally approved the study. So it took 3 years just to go from FDA to DHHS, okay? Allowing marijuana from the federal government's pot farm at the University of Mississippi to be used. You do know we have a federal pot farm, right? Yeah. In May, the University of Arizona signed a contract with Dr. Sisley and the Multidisciplinary Association for Psychedelic Studies, or MAPS, the organization that was putting up $1 million for the study. So the last hurdle to clear was approval from the DEA for Dr. Sisley's research space at the University of Arizona. The DEA had to approve the actual lab, you know, make sure there's enough security protocols and all that. But now that Dr. Sisley has been terminated It would take at least 18 months for her to secure a position at another university and to be vetted for the PTSD trial again. That is, if Dr. Cicely can secure another position. She fears that her work on cannabis research may have made her, quote, so politically radioactive that no university wants to touch me, end quote. She continued by saying, quote, this is a clear political retaliation for the advocacy and education I have been providing the public and lawmakers. I pulled all my evaluations, and this is not about my job performance, end quote. According to Dr. Cicely, her work on marijuana garnered negative attention from lawmakers in Phoenix opposed to marijuana, who then pressured the university to fire her before her research could begin. Officials at the University of Arizona, on the other hand, declined to discuss personnel matters, but did tell USA Today in an email, quote, you should know that the University of Arizona has not received political pressure to terminate any employee, according to university spokesperson George Humphrey. Also, the university's decision to fire Dr. Cicely is final and not subject to review. All right, so what's the problem, U of A? What was she fired for, if not the fact that she was going to become the first researcher in the United States to be given federal permission to study medical marijuana? We know damn well how your governor and how most of your Republicans that are controlling that state feel about the passage of the medical marijuana initiative that barely passed with 50.13%. Your governor has been calling for the feds to come in and do something about it. So don't give us this explanation that there was no political pressure to fire any employee. I'll tell you what probably happened. I speculate that they were told that this study couldn't go on. That if the University of Arizona were studying medical marijuana, that would be politically damaging to the people who want to keep medical marijuana from spreading, both in Arizona and nationwide. And University of Arizona realized, uh-oh, we've signed a contract. We've already got our name on the dotted line. The only way we can get out of this is to fire Dr. Cicely. That's what I think happened. We're back with Dr. Earlywine and your calls right after this.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
Big Daddy Fink's Funky Roller Rink, the best in late 70s soul, funk, and disco. Every Thursday at 5 and 8 Pacific with 2-hour replays Friday at 10 p.m. Pacific on 420radio.org.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information.
It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times Magazine
Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Half past and time for us to visit with Dr. Mitch Earlywine in Albany, New York. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Delightful. How about you?
I'm fantastic, although a little sunburned. I put on the sunscreen like you told me, but I must have sweat some of it off on my bike ride, and I got a little sunburned, but I'm doing okay.
I have to admit, I have a little bit down by my ankles where I rolled my socks down further than I thought I had.
There you go. And before we get started, Left Wing Larry came down the stairs and he said, will you ask Dr. Mitch how he pronounces the name of the city he's from? Because apparently me and Priscilla and even our announcer keep calling it Albany.
So I actually sat next to the guy who was in I Dream of Jeannie. I don't know if you remember him. And yeah. He was from Albany, Georgia.
Yeah.
And he always says it Albany, and so, of course, I figure anybody who can be near Barbara Eden, I want to talk like him.
There you go. All right. I like that standard of pronunciation, the Barbara Eden standard. Folks, today for Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, we're taking your calls at 971-533-7111, or you can get into our chat room where we've already got a couple of questions. Before we get to them, I do want to ask you about a study that broke just as we were getting ready to go off on vacation, and is this one that found a genetic link between schizophrenia and cannabis use. And interestingly, in the opposite direction that they usually say, I mean, this one said, if you have the schizophrenic gene, you're more likely to try cannabis than the other way around. Can you fill us in a bit on that?
I mean, this is something that like Dale Gehringer from California Normal and I have been talking about for years. And it's really suggesting that there's a propensity towards a certain reaction to cannabis, maybe that's a heritable, that's also either near the gene or the same gene as the one that puts you at risk for psychotic disorders. So it may not even be a self-medication thing so much as just this is something you inherit that alters your subjective effect of cannabis and makes you like it and happens to be something that's also correlated with having schizotypal or sort of mild psychotic symptoms at the very least. It really puts a damper on this idea that marijuana causes cannabis and seems much more compelling that whatever is a source of schizophrenia risk is also something that makes you enjoy the plant.
So is that, you know, to say that there's kind of a genetic predisposition toward your particular drug of choice, at least with respect to cannabis?
Well, and in fact, we've seen that in other data sets that had nothing to do with psychosis. So there's a subset of folks who, and I mean, you know, I mean, you've even dated a few, where they use cannabis and it just makes them painfully self-conscious and they don't enjoy the plant at all. And another subset of folks who the first time they use it, it really resonates for them and they find it delightful. We've got heritability of alcohol responses and of responses to stimulants too. People differ and it's not a big surprise. And this is absolutely consistent with that idea that there's a biological contributor to your subjective experience of different drugs.
So if there's this link or if there's this closeness between the let's call it the cannabis appreciation gene and, you know, the schizotypal type of gene, does one's affinity for cannabis suggest they ought to talk to a mental health professional screening for, you know, possible mental disorders?
It's such a low base rate phenomenon. So, in fact, both these things are also mildly correlated with creativity. You know, I mean, it's not that it's necessarily a negative thing. And I think the key is more, you know, anybody who wants to talk to a mental health professional just to sort things out, it's always a great idea. But the notion that you like cannabis, therefore you must be at risk for psychosis, just doesn't have enough empirical support.
Okay. We're taking calls at 971-533-7111. Had one from the 808. I had to drop for a second. There's a little too much noise on the line. But if you want to call back in, we're ready for your call. In the meantime, we've got a question from our chat room from Runaround who wants to know, if a cannabis deficiency can lead to certain illnesses and some of us can't use cannabis due to a job search, are there other good places to get cannabinoids besides mother's milk?
The curious thing is any disorder that, you know, responds to one green leafy plant has the potential to respond to a bunch of other ones, even some that might not be psychoactive. So some of the disorders that respond to cannabinoids that aren't necessarily the ones that create intoxication are loosely related to the kinds of things you see in kale and spinach and, you know, all those things that we're supposed to be eating anyway. And so there's certainly that odd and distant connection, but one that's always worth trying. And then, you know, the cannabinoid system is indirectly affected by all kinds of good health behaviors. So we've seen things related to exercise, to making sure your sleep is good, all those kinds of things. It's general good health in a nutshell.
All right. Let's go to our phone lines now, where 808 is back on the line. What's your question for Dr. Mitch?
Aloha. I was wondering, 2 weeks ago, I had surgery for my for an ulcer. I had emergency. I was taken in, and they did surgery right away. Well, now I'm using hash oil made with isopropyl alcohol. I was wondering if I made those into capsules and ate those capsules, would it bother my ulcer or from my surgery?
Unfortunately, it's likely that it would. Alcohol can have an irritating effect on the mucosa, on the inside of the stomach and esophagus. And so something that was more glycerin-based or oil-based would have a much better outcome.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Hey, thank you for calling in. We appreciate your call, and aloha to you as well. We're taking your questions for Dr. Mitch Earlywine in our live cannabis Q&A. You can get into our chat room through Ustream or just at our page at 420radio.org. And if you're not listening live, you can always call 971-533-7111 and leave your question as a voicemail message, and we'll be able to get to those as well. Now, I also wanted to talk to Dr. Mitch a little bit about some of the news stories, and particularly the one I did in Behind the Headlines, where Dr. Sisley out at University of Arizona got fired. She was going to be leading the first approved study of cannabis for post-traumatic stress diagnosis. And since you're a university researcher, maybe you can give us an idea of the politics that might have gone into this. I mean, what happened?
As soon as the steam stops coming out of my ears, I'll probably be able to talk about this a little more coherently. I've emailed a friend who's at the University of Arizona. I'm trying to find out as much detail as possible. The administration has been incredibly closed-lipped, but it just doesn't make any sense. I'm completely flummoxed by this. There is no precedent from any other university. She had approval. She had IRB approval for this study. No one can be fired simply because they're doing research that's actually funded and already approved. I can't imagine they could have a leg to stand on to say that they're doing this because of her advocacy work. So it's clearly a giant mystery. I mean, unless she's been out doing something really horrible, I certainly hope the ACLU will get this covered up and handled as quickly as possible, because this is absolutely nuts. And it's impairing, you know, our opportunity to do some really supremely important work for, you know, American veterans.
Yeah. And with respect to this, you know, it does seem to be politically motivated. Does the university, I saw hints of this in some of the reports, that it was something to do with, they've got regulations. You can't be a political advocate and use the university's name and your advocacy. And then I saw her response that, you know, I did all my advocacy on my off time. Is there some little tech, you know, ethical loophole they're going to get to use here to justify this firing?
A couple of my colleagues have taken heat for this very thing. And when I publish letters to the editor in our local paper, they often do say that I'm at the University of Albany, and I will occasionally get, you know, spanking emails saying I shouldn't be doing that. But the truth is, I am at University of Albany. So I find this just so upsetting in the first place, just from a sort of First Amendment's right stance. But of course she did this on her own time. They don't own her. She's got plenty of time that's not a part of her workday where she can advocate all she wants. And that's the part that I just find so extremely upsetting. And so I'm eager to see where this goes, because it's really going to diminish our opportunity to get more data that could really help the movement.
All right. And I wanted to tackle something else that was in the news that's not directly marijuana related, but I think it really says a lot about this country and how we're trying to control people and deny them medical choices that are against science. They're against science and reason. And if that, I'm speaking, of course, of the Supreme Court decision in this Hobby Lobby case, where closely held corporations that have a sincere religious belief that a certain contraception is what they call abortifacient, they can get out of the Obamacare mandates to cover that. And that just seems to be the same kind of anti-science bias that we're finding that keeps medical marijuana in the dark ages here. Any comments on that Hobby Lobby decision?
I mean, it's pretty complicated in that the way that law is written, the religious belief doesn't have to be based in any kind of fact.
Right.
So it's so upsetting to me. And, you know, I don't want to sound like Richard Dawkins or something, but the fact that you can have an opinion and that guides a policy, whether it's based on Iron Age fairy tales or actual data, is completely flummoxing in all directions. So I'm completely sad about this, but I also feel like this is going to really be bad in the long run, because people who need contraception are going to end up doing the exact thing that they don't want, which is end up with having abortions.
Right. There's always that angle to that argument. And, you know, for me, it's this anti-science bias. And like you hit on it, if you have a sincerely held belief, whether it's true or not, then we can ignore law and everything except if you're a Rastafarian with a sincerely held religious belief that marijuana is sacrament. And then, of course, that doesn't count because too many people like pot.
And in truth, if they were Islamic and said everybody who works for us will do whatever, but you have to cover your face, we'd be having a cow.
Yeah. If you're trying to institute something you hear on the right wing message boards all the time, Sharia law. This idea of the Muslims wanting to institute, you know, women having to wear veils and all of that kind of stuff. How is this decision any different? I don't see it.
I'm completely with you.
All right. Let's get to the marijuana stories again. And in the news, another story that I wanted to talk to you about was New York just signed its medical marijuana law. You're there in New York, and they're going to have five companies to grow that each can have four dispensaries. So you can have one dispensary for every million people, and apparently only non-smoked forms of cannabis. How weird is this that you can't get flower, but you can get oil?
I'm so lost on this one, and I wrote the governor, I wrote one of his aides, I spoke to two legislators, I've done everything I can to point out that the flower has 5 millennia of safety data, and the extracts have about 2 years. I mean, it's really silly, and it smacks of this oddball big pharma, you know. Somebody's going to make a lot of cash off this when what we should be having is home grows.
Yeah, it's just very, very frustrating. And speaking of the home grows, we saw in Los Angeles a farmer's market type situation open up over the weekend. They have had over 5,000 patients come into that. And, the owner there expressing how patients could get, you know, 70% off what the prices would be in the dispensaries. One particular quote that I thought was interesting is a guy who said, "Dispensaries are so last decade." And I'm wondering, as you look forward to, you know, now Washington State's opening up pot shops, do you see medical marijuana becoming more of a farmer's market thing, particularly out west?
It sounds really odd, but in fact, this was pretty much how medicine worked in the 1700s. You kind of just went to the shop and met with the pharmacist and the various growers and got the kinds of things that you needed in order to have your own little first aid supply. And it's so foreign to what we're used to with Big Pharma having all these tight controls, but it's completely consistent with it. I'm concerned that the dominant strains, some of the strains that are particularly popular but aren't necessarily the ones that deal with some of the low base rate symptoms, are going to take over. Mm-hmm. So somebody who's got a special strain that they really need for something that's relatively rare may end up in a quandary trying to find that strain because everybody's running after the skunk weed that's got 19% THC or something like that.
That's kind of a similar phenomenon we have in pharmaceuticals with the whole orphan drug phenomenon, correct?
Exactly. And in fact, orphan drugs have special funding and are exempt of certain taxes and get certain government handouts, if you will, in order to make sure they're around for the people who need them. And the idea of something comparable for certain strains is going to be a hard one for some people to take.
Yeah, but it does sound like a good idea that there be some sort of, orphan strains regulations. I know Berkeley Patients Group said that they gotta get 2% of their cannabis, or Berkeley, I'm sorry, City of Berkeley said they got to get 2% of their cannabis for free to homeless and indigent patients. So maybe we are moving that way.
I can only hope.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Mitch joins us every Monday for our Cannabis Q&A segment. Thank you so much for being a part of the show, Dr. Mitch, and have yourself a great day.
My pleasure. Have a great day, too.
All right. When we come back, we're going to be visiting with experts in the Washington legal marijuana industry that's starting tomorrow. Stay tuned.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio, your ticket to the Boston Freedom Rally. When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Visit her website, firedeuplawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your fired-up lawyer, or email firedeuplawyer@gmail.com. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Hey, Lindsay. I wish you didn't smoke weed. You're not the same when you smoke. And I miss my friend. I'll be outside.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. Mark Twain once said that when there's a gold rush, it's a good time to be in the pick and shovel business. Today, we look at the rapidly evolving markets in the marijuana green rush in our Cannabusiness Chronicles.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 48 after the hour, and we are going to have ourselves a discussion of the newly emerging Washington State cannabis industry. As you know, Colorado started its marijuana sales on January 1st. Washington State is now ready to begin Act 2 of marijuana legalization with its rollout of the first 24 marijuana licensees in the state of Washington. The licenses were handed out early this morning through electronic means, and there's a 24-hour wait period, so the first shops will be opening tomorrow. A few of them will open later out through the week. We will be in Seattle at Cannabis City at 2733 4th Avenue South in Seattle tomorrow. Catching a train after the show, going to make my way up to Seattle, and we will attempt to bring you live coverage. I don't know what their internet situation is up there. We'll find out. But we will definitely have some sort of coverage through my 4G smartphone if we have to. But we will have some sort of coverage of the first day of legal weed in Washington State. Now, there are Like I said, 24 outlets that have been licensed. Whidbey Island Cannabis Company in Langley, Westside 420 Recreational in Longview, Verde Valley in Union Gap, Top Shelf Cannabis in Bellingham, the Happy Crop Shop, love that name, in East Wenatchee, Spokane Greenleaf in Spokane, Space in Tacoma. This is interesting. Satori Instant Karma in Spokane, New Vansterdam in Vancouver, up on Mill Plain Boulevard, just about 8 miles away from us here. Margie's Pot Shop in Bingen, Main Street Marijuana in Vancouver, High Time Station in Ephrata, Green Theory in Bellevue, Green Star Cannabis in Spokane, Freedom Market in Kelso, Creative Retail Management in Tacoma, Cascade Crops in Arlington, Cannabis City in Seattle, again, where we will be, Bud Hut in Kamano Island, Austin Lot in Winthrop, Altitude in Prosser, For Us Retail in Okanagan, 420 Carpenter in Lacey, and 2020 Solutions in Bellingham. And it's kind of interesting to me that as we are seeing these first licenses go out, we've only got one license in the entire city of Seattle. Now, there's a few of the, Tacoma and Bellingham are kind of close, but, for the city of Seattle, one licensee, it's going to be very interesting being there tomorrow. We've got three licensees on the eastern side of the state in Spokane, Washington, where they're far less friendly toward cannabis. So I'll also be interested to see how those three outlets are able to thrive and survive in Spokane. Two outlets in Vancouver, Washington, just north of us here in Portland, Oregon. I was interviewed by the Oregonian's Noel Crombie with respect to the marijuana stores opening up in Vancouver, and particularly how that would affect Portland's marijuana consumers. And I had to be honest, it's not going to affect us much at all. I might anticipate a few, novelty seekers going across the river to buy legal weed just because they can, just because it's freedom, and to be able to get that first, receipt to show that they were a part of legal marijuana. But that would be about it. I don't see them returning. And especially because a lot of these retailers are talking about restricting how much supply they're going to allow to be sold. We saw some of this in the first week in Colorado as well, where people were allowed to buy up to an ounce if they were a Colorado resident, and a quarter ounce if they were a tourist. But they were restricting everybody to like an eighth because they didn't want to run out of product. Washington's got a much more severe product situation going on, where they don't have enough licensed growers. Part of the problem was Washington State, the Liquor Control Board and the regulators and the consultants that consulted them don't often have a very clear idea what's going on with marijuana. I read this just the other day, how Washington State Liquor Control Board anticipated a few hundred people would sign up to be legal marijuana growers. And they got applications for 7,000 of them. 7,000. How could they have not anticipated it? Do you live in the Pacific Northwest? Do you know our reputation for marijuana growing? This, and the opportunity to become a legal grower, to actually make money on this and not have to worry about losing all your possessions and going to prison and getting your dog shot. Of course, over 7,000 people jumped at that. Of course, people jumped at the possibility of getting in on the ground floor of the only growth industry we've got in the 21st century in this country. So, bureaucratic mismanagement, flawed consulting advice has put Washington State in a precarious position. I mentioned how Colorado was Act One. Now, if you know anything about screenwriting, screenplays, books, movies, plays, they're typically a three-act thing. And in the first act, it's when you introduce your characters and your story. So Colorado's done that for us. Colorado's introduced the characters and the story. We know what's going on. There's legal pot shops. There's edibles. There's concern about that. All the stuff that we got out of Colorado. Act One, though, is generally a positive thing. We got all that great tax information. All that great tax revenue data. We got all that great drop in crime data. We got all that all that data showing no real increase in use. We saw all those stings where there was no pot shop willing to sell to an underaged person. We got the information on the DUI stop, where 1,500 cars were stopped on a weekend night, and nobody was given a DUI for marijuana out of 1,500 cars. So that was our Act 1. But then there's Act 2. And in a screenplay, Act 2 is typically where the tension happens and the conflicts begin. That's where we get the sense of impending need to wrap it all up in Act 3, right? So Act 2 is where the bad stuff's happen. Enter Washington. And again, through this bureaucratic mismanagement, failing to account for how many people would apply to be growers, producing a legalization proposal that's way overtaxed, we're going to see a rollout in Washington State where there's going to be shortages, where there's going to be pot shops running out in the first week, where there's going to be pictures of internet of receipts on Facebook and all throughout the internet of people showing the $80 they paid for an eighth or whatever it ends up being. Going to go through all of that. And we're going to see these, I don't know, man-made issues happening when, in contrast to Colorado, that will make it seem like there's a problem with marijuana legalization. And one of the things I've always been worried about in the legalization movement is that we finally get legalization, but we get it in such a way that it's so screwed up and so dysfunctional. And not owing to the fact that we legalized, but owing to the fact that we legalized badly, that it's so screwed up and dysfunctional to say, oh, see, we legalized and it didn't work out and it really sucked. And see, we need to go back to the way it was. That's a legit fear. That's a fear the people that were in the NOAA and I-502 camp had. They had that fear that it just wasn't the right legalization. So that's our Act 2. And if this Act 2 rolls out with a lot of problems and a lot of complaints, we might have ourselves in a position where some people might second guess whether we should legalize in Oregon in 2014. That's a legit fear too, that we look across the river and see that, oh, it didn't work. And okay, so we better not do it here. But despite that fear, I'm actually much more hopeful than fearful. And that's because I really think that we've reached the tipping point. And that while we may lose a battle from time to time, we're generally winning the war. And Washington's rollout could have been much more harmful if Colorado didn't pass as well. But with Colorado passing and having what's generally considered to be a very successful rollout of marijuana legalization, all that will do, if Washington proves to be a failure, is to show how to and how not to legalize. Had Washington passed by itself, it'd been easier for our opponents to slap the label of failure on legalization itself. But now that we've got two, Colorado and Washington, they have to pass the failure on to how it was legalized. And then we wrap things up in November with Act 3, with possibly Washington, D.C., Oregon, and Alaska all passing legalization. And with those rolling out more smoothly, Washington will appear to be more of an outlier. And by 2015 and 2016, as they get going into their recreational retail shops and that money starts flowing in, Washington will be forced to make a change. The legislature will be forced to revisit those high taxes. They'll be forced to adjust to what's going on in the states around them. I'm Radical Russ. That's all the time we got for today, but stay tuned for Hour 2. Toker Talk Radio is up next, taking your calls at 971-533-7111. For Priscilla Seib, I'm Radical Russ, and until next time, take care of each other, Tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. Take
you're trying, you're rolling, you're smoking. You take a seat, you manage, you